and become Death, the destroyer of worlds. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Watch Film Podcast. My name is Scott.
And I'm Steve.
And yeah, that's right. I just led with that heinous quote from Oppenheimer. And this is our review of Oppenheimer. Can you imagine? This is our review of Barbie.
Barbenheimer.
Barbenheimer.
Yeah.
No, we're not doing Barbenheimer.
We're not doing that.
This is our review. Although, I'll watch Barbie. Ben wants to watch it, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's not my thing.
This is our review of Oppenheimer. But before we talk about this nonsensical Barbenheimer thing that is going on, Stephen, where can everyone find everything else we've ever done?
On all major podcast providers.
They can. And you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for Watch the Film Pod. So Oppenheimer, the latest Christopher Nolan mega film, monumental movie that he likes to throw away. 2 weeks out now, is it?
Yes.
I went...
You went the first weekend, I went last week.
We went last weekend.
Yeah.
A bit of a meaty three-hour... spectacle the right word? Would you define it as a spectacle?
It was a bit of a big hitter, wasn't it?
I think spectacle's a fair.
Yeah. Yeah. You're good again, aren't you?
Tomorrow. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to see it for a third time.
Yeah.
That's 9 hours of nuclear fun. but yeah, Oppenheimer, a couple of weeks out now. We're just going to do a little bit of a review. A spoiler. I think we'll have a spoiler review.
Yeah, we'll go
from the off. We'll go into spoilers.
Yeah.
For anyone who's listened before, to some of our older stuff, I'm a massive Christopher Nolan fan.
Certainly,
yeah. Yep. I think you're a Christopher Nolan fan as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah. I like your stuff, yeah.
I think when you look at, you know, in the lead up to this, there was lots of ranking the Christopher Nolan films. Is that you making a noise on the microphone?
Is that me
there?
Rustling a bag of crisps?
Is that you? Is that really appropriate?
Shocking. Absolutely shocking.
Really appropriate? Should I take a little pause in what I was going to say so you can elaborate on that for our listeners?
Yeah. Well, no, just carry on what you're saying and we'll go into that in a moment.
We'll come to that in a second. Yeah. In the lead up to this, there was lots of like ranking videos of Nolan. And when you actually see them all written down, it's like, yeah, he's got some pretty decent films, hasn't he? There's some pretty good ones in there. Yeah, they're not all as monumentally good as each other, and I think it's open to interpretation which one's your favourite one, which one isn't and stuff. But, yeah, he's done some good films down there, hasn't he? And I would add this to the list of those films.
He's done
some really good ones, but I really enjoyed this. I think it's hard to say which is his best film, because I think Christopher Nolan has a different interpretation on the word film with each project that he does as well. I think we said before, you can kind of like put a ribbon around different types of films. I think the Batman films are their own little style. He's got his sci-fi, timey type ones in one bracket.
There's a style to them.
I mean genre type thing.
Yeah.
And they're, because, like, well, not to like go forward in time and back in time, we're going to talk about Wes Anderson a little bit later tonight when we're recording. All of his films are, they're all one in the, of the same style, aren't they? Yeah. Same genre, if you like. But what I mean is, Nolan likes to play with time in some of his films, but then he can do a Dunkirk, which is a meaty exploration of history, you know, and you have things like that, don't you? And I think it's hard to compare. That was my point.
Yes.
So like, I couldn't compare this to Inception or Interstellar.
But in Dunkirk, he manipulates time in selling the story as well, doesn't he?
Yeah. And yeah, uses that as...
Which he kind of does in this film as well.
He does, he does. Use it as a storytelling device. So you could argue... Yeah. Apart from the Batman films, they've all got time involved in. But what I mean is, Dunkirk and Oppenheimer are explorations of history.
Yes.
The Batman films are fictional, you know, things like that.
Yeah, I know what you're saying,
But, yeah, I really enjoyed this. I mean, we'll dive a little bit deeper into some of the reasons why in a minute. I'll pass it over to you, Stephen, with your crisps, and you can explain why people are wincing in their earphones when they're listening
to this. Yeah, this is a little nod to the guy who spoilt my experience of this film for the first good 45 minutes where I was just sat there absolutely seething with myself. I opened a packet of crisps and...
you Oppenheimered a packet of crisps?
I Oppenheimered a packet of crisps and the guy 2 seats away from me leant over his friend who was sat next to me, put his hand on my other packet of crisps and rustled them and said...
He said
quite a lot of expletives at me about why the hell would you rustle a packet of crisps and... I just sat there absolutely gobsmacked and amazed that he'd just done that. And just then I sat down and I was like, really, really annoyed. And then I thought, why have I not said something? But then if I say something, then I'm...
Well, you fall into a conversation.
I don't like to talk in the cinema.
Yeah.
When people do talk in the cinema, I find it so rude.
Although,
And the
you remember
day before,
we saw one of the Saw films, and you just yelled, "Are you going to shut up then?" when there was people talking. You, like, years ago, when I was like, when I couldn't drive or whatever, like when I was 14 or something. Yeah,
yeah. Well, that's because people are talking. Like, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I've mellowed out since then. I just sit there now and just think, "Oh, will you shut up?" Like,
I found my inner zen.
But when I was in my early 20s, I would stand up and shout abuse at people. I've actually done that. I took you to see the
it was
first
summer.
Hulk film.
Oh, it might have been that one.
It was that.
It might
wasn't
have been
it?
That, and you just yelled, "Are you going to be quiet then, or what?"
Shut up then.
It's me like thinking, "Oh my like god!"
I stood up and shouted at a kid behind me once because he was throwing popcorn. I can't remember what film that was. That was years ago. But anyway,
I'm going to feel sorry for you a little bit. No, let's stick to.
I thought it was pretty rude, pretty offensive, and then I went out of my way to make as much noise as I could, and then I thought, really, why am I doing this?
It was excellent.
See what happened.
Well, no, just that. It was just very...
What do you mean for the 45 minutes that I sat there and waited for the most quietest part in the film?
And then folded your giant bag of quavers.
And then I got a big bag of quavers and opened them and couldn't open them. Yeah. Oppenheimered them. I was like this.
But,
and Scott went, "Are you?" And I went, "Yes, I am."
And but then, just let me...
And then the guy got up and ran out.
Let me
end of the film.
Let me just bring
what
it back to
fool.
You slightly, because I did feel
what a fool.
It was very unfortunate thing to have happened, because I feel like you said it took you out of the film for the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, it did, yeah. It took me out of it.
It's like
first,
anything.
Yeah.
It's like if you're driving and someone cuts you up or gives you a bit of grief on like road rage and you feel like I haven't actually done anything wrong, your headspace is knocked a little bit.
So it annoyed me. It annoyed me then that I thought, why have I not stood up and like not and
said something back?
Said something back and not had a right good go at him, yeah.
But
then I thought, well, no, I'm not going
to
do that because I'm wasting
That's the thing, innit? I'm not someone who likes confrontation. I don't think you seek it kind of thing. You're the same.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. Yeah. No, not unless it's the Hulk. But yeah. I was more taken aback that someone would have like the audacity to do some... Yeah, we're good. Yeah, we're good. Stephen just felt he'd rustled his crisps too hard and knocked his wire out there. No, yeah. We're good. I feel that I was really disappointed for you that someone had the audacity to do that in a cinema anyway, because like you say, you're not one who will talk, and I could have understood if you was on your phone or if me and you were just having a blown full-on conversation.
The guy in front got up four times and I'm thinking,
and there was people behind us.
There's people talking behind us. I'm thinking, what
naturally in a cinema you hear noises.
Yeah.
And I felt it was a bit out of order, that other thing. So bring it in back to the film.
But yeah, so it took me out of the film for a little bit, so I didn't really concentrate as much on it. And then afterwards, I was playing catch up. And
I'm a little bit gutted.
I was a little bit like, it's
I'm a little
my
bit
enjoyment.
Gutted because I think...
It's spoiled my enjoyment of the film.
Not that everybody has to share an opinion, right?
Yeah.
But I will be honest, this is quite high on the Christopher Nolan list for me, right?
Well, I'm just going to say this. It spoiled my enjoyment of the film. I would say like... The night before, we'd been to see Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. And you came into the cinema late because of traffic and the road was closed and you got there a little bit late. So you missed the submarine
part. I've not seen the last five. And I thought,
You haven't seen the first one.
The previous four films.
So you weren't really that invested into it.
And 10 minutes, it ain't going to matter.
So you weren't really that invested into it. But, you know, as a standalone film, you could have gotten the enjoyment out of it. And you watched it, and it was good. However, the person next to you was up and down like a yo-yo.
Yep.
And they were talking and rustling, and that's what annoyed me. I was like gobsmacked that the night before we'd had that.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought, God, if this guy had been sat there, what would he have done? Would he just like cried and like ran over and slapped them about a bit, or would he just, you know, had like some sort of meltdown, like a 2-year-old child, you know, like some sort of tantrum on the floor? I was like, wow, I wish you'd been sat with us yesterday. And I think that spoiled your enjoyment of that film.
Yeah, I'll go.
And it did.
Yeah.
I knew it did, because you was like, I could see you was. And I said to you, do you want to move? And we didn't move, but you know, and it did. It
takes you out of it.
It takes you out of the film. I was really looking forward to this film, and it took me out of the film. The guy next to me. Because he was embarrassed because his body language and what he said afterwards and the fact that the title came up, a film by Christopher Nolan, and I heard the door go as it was running out, it was so funny. But this is going away from the film, but this is a prime example. This is a prime example about how you enjoy a film. When people go to cinema, and I'm going to start going a little soapbox here and have a little bit of a rant. When you go to cinema, me personally, I'm always respectful of other people. That's why it... He's doing it. He's opening a bag of crisps. How disrespectful. No, but it's right though. I will try not to make as much noise as I can. I will try, even if I need the toilet, I will, like, I'm sorry if I've got to go to the toilet. I'm really, I want to enjoy the film.
Just gag out of the seat like that.
And there's other people who go to the cinema nowadays, even like kids who go to the cinema. When I was 16, 15, you know, going to the cinema on my own first time, I used to go all the time. I used to have a cinema pass, you know, I used to get the vouchers that you used to get from TSB, you know, that sort of thing.
Other banks are available.
Other banks, well, they weren't back then. It was only TSB that did them. But, you know, you used to get the cinema vouchers or £1.50 for a cinema ticket. You know, wow, let's go back to them days. But, you know, it was... I went with my friends and we never behaved like that. Mm. Nowadays, society's... And it's going off on a tangent here about society, but how people are nowadays, how disrespectful they are in the cinema. Yeah. And it really grinds on me when I think what I'm like. And then for somebody to do that,
it was
annoying. But it does take you out the film, and this is what I'm saying, that your enjoyment of Mission Impossible was
hindered by it.
Yeah. My enjoyment of this film was. And then I sort of like want invested in it.
Do you think it's fair to say...
I need to watch it. And what I'm going to say is, I need to sit down in the cinema and watch this film again.
And I'll go a fourth time. I'm not being disrespectful to Mission Impossible. I think you'll understand my point I'm trying to make. Do you feel that hindrance affected you more in this than it did me more in Mission Impossible, given the context and the content and the weight of the storytelling and the confusing timeline that may or may not be?
It threw me out, I'm not going to lie.
Mission Impossible, it's an action film. It's jumping off a cliff in a bike. You know, is what it is.
Yeah,
I feel a film like this.
It threw me out. It threw me out.
You had to be familiar with it.
So my opinion on this film, like I said, there's not a great deal I'm going to bring to this other than it was a good film. I enjoyed it. It was a good story. I enjoyed it. It was a little bit complex at times, but I think that was my own fault from not, you know, like from this instant
being
at the start
at
the film, threw me out a little bit. So there's a little bit like that there, that, you know, that sort of got my nerves a little bit. And I didn't enjoy the film as much. I would need to sit and watch it again. But like all Nolan films, I think his films are that you need to sit and watch them again. And to be honest with you, you need a big TV or a big IMAX screen or a big Eisen screen to watch them on. You do need to watch them on the big screen. The same as Tenet. I enjoyed that more the second time. Because I would say that twice.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that the second time. Interstellar, I did. And Inception, same with that. Is it his best film? For me, it's not his best film. You know, did I like the story it was telling? I did like the story it was telling. I would like to have seen more about the atomic bomb, and this wasn't about that. Mm. It was about
the
build-up. It was about the man and the build-up to this point in history.
Yeah.
And the aftermath.
Beyond. Yeah.
And beyond. I liked that, but it was a little bit rushed at the beginning, I felt. There was a little bit about his history about, I mean, I've watched a few documentaries about him going into this, about the poison apple. So again, spoilers here, but about the poison apple, it was just sort of just shown and thrown away. It was like a one small scene and that's it, you know, and there was a lot more in there that they could have done that they didn't. But I did think it hit all the notes. It did offer a very good story. It was a very good film. I liked the way it was shot. I liked the cinematography. The fact that they blew the bomb up and that, again, it didn't wow me like I thought it would. Really? I was kind of expecting a bit more out of it, you know. But, it was okay. It was good. I enjoyed it. I do think I need to see it again because of the experience that I had. And this isn't a one-off. There are other films where I've had to watch them again because, I'll be honest with you, I said this before many times about Thor Ragnarok not enjoying it. I went to a cinema there. It was full of kids and they were screaming and shouting and it just spoilt the enjoyment of the film. So I do need to see a film,
and that's fair
two
enough
or three times.
I think...
I'm certainly one of these who I would love my own private screen,
mm-hmm,
and watch a film on my own because I do get easily distracted by other people. If there's somebody playing on the phone further down, it really, I can see that, that's annoying me, that, and I'm taken away from the film. There's somebody up and down in front of me, so this film,
that's fair,
was spoilt by that, really. But yeah, it was a good film. It was all right. Yeah.
Let me have my little experience things, because I had a bit of a different experience to this, because you just mentioned a minute ago about big screen.
Yes.
I had my first IMAX screen.
You did, didn't you?
Experience.
The first time you saw this, you went to York, was it?
I went to York.
Yeah.
So for anyone who's listening who's not knowledgeable of the East Riding of Yorkshire,
it's a few miles away.
Yeah, Hull's quite a big-ish city in England. York's a town, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not city, is it? So York's a town, but their Cineworld, which is different to the one that we go over here, has dedicated IMAX screens. Now, I believe it's a laser IMAX screen.
Yes.
Because I think the 70mm, not that I'm some like mega nerd on this kind of thing, but a 70mm IMAX screen, there's like four of them in the country, I think. So you're talking about like your London ones and things like that. So there's not many of... That's the one where the 11 mile reel or whatever it was. So this was a digital IMAX, but I have not seen a screen as big as this before. It was as tall... It was real weird, because when you went in... I mean, first of all, Cineworld York, really, we'll need to go. We'll need to go and experience something there as us in this kind of thing. Very, really nice little setup. When you went in, it was really shallow in terms of like how close you were. You were really close to the screen, but when you went in, you were like on top of it. It was as tall as a set of rugby posts.
The
screen was massive, and it was really
curved slightly.
Like bent in a little bit. But it was really clever how it was set up, because the seats kind of went, because of how tall the screen was, they had that scope to go up rather than back. So you were still quite close, even though you were like on the second to back row or something like that.
So it was quite steep.
But yeah, this was, you know, it's been heavily billed as see it in IMAX, see it in IMAX. So I wanted to see that. This has been my film of the year, really, and sort of been looking forward to. And it was amazing. Seeing it on that size, and the noise and the... Because I felt there was a lot in this film where, obviously, seeing it twice, you look out for things a bit more. There was a lot of this film where it was wanting you to be kind of like become... It was almost like it was looking in a mirror in a lot of scenes.
Yeah.
Where it was really close up on people's faces, or seeing their reaction to things, you know, it's on a profile view of somebody. Quite a lot of it was really close up to people.
Yeah.
And I reckon that's why the selling point was see it in IMAX, see it in IMAX, because you kind of got sucked into... the thought process of certainly Oppenheimer, anyway, the journey that he went on in it. But I also felt with Downey Jr.'s, you have to help me on his name. What was his name?
Strauss.
I felt on for Strauss as well, there was a lot of scenes where he was showing emotion, and towards the end, that aggression, that anger. That was one of the, to me, I don't agree with you that, not that I don't agree with you because it's an opinion, but were you saying about not being impressed by the bomb? But that was one of them things that I felt was, it was a part of the story of it, and it was, I had the misconception, I thought the film would end with the bomb going off. I thought that would be like what you built up to. But really...
I kind of knew it wasn't, because I knew...
I watched a documentary
about it, and I knew about Strauss and everything, so...
I knew nothing about that, you see. But I felt really the film was an exploration of Oppenheimer and his polarizing relationship with Strauss.
Yeah.
It was almost Oppenheimer v. Strauss, the film, wasn't it, as opposed to it just being Oppenheimer. But, so the IMAX thing was amazing. But equally enjoyed it as much the second time, you know, for the film.
I definitely need to see it.
Yeah, I would say to
watch it again.
I feel we need to praise the immense acting in it.
Yeah, what I will say is, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not negative about the film. I think I'm more negative about the experience that I had.
Yeah.
The film was a really good film.
Yeah.
I don't think it was his best
film. I know he hated it.
For me, because, I still think Interstellar, or I really need to go back and watch.
What was better, Oppenheimer or The Flash? I'm joking. That's referencing the Secret Invasion quote.
Yeah. I need to... I don't know. The Flash had Batman. I need to... what film is it?
Tenet.
No. You're going to have to go through them now.
Interstellar. Inception.
Not Inception. Insomnia.
Oh, yeah.
Insomnia. Really early film of his early, I think 2002, 2003, something like that. I need to go back and watch that, because I haven't seen that for years, and... I really enjoyed that at the time, and I think maybe like a 4K version of that, I'd like to see that, just simply to see the shots in that and the cinematography in it as well, because that's a lot
that's
of what
early.
Adds.
That would be a while ago. Yeah.
That really adds, that's like his big blockbuster film, the first one that he did, really. And I think it's, if I'm right, man, I might be completely wrong here, I think it's based on a Swedish or a Norwegian film or something, or a Dutch film. It's based on another, like a Scandinavian film or something like that. It's based on a story that he'd taken. Now, I might be completely wrong there, but it is an early film of his. It was one that he did after Memento.
Yeah.
I think he did Memento, then did that, then did The Prestige, and then went obviously into the Batman films. Yeah, I mean, for me, I watched like a 15-minute video recently showing you all the shots and cinematography from all these films while it was playing the music, I think, from Interstellar and from Time, Hans Zimmer Time. And it's playing those two pieces of music together, sort of like one and then went into the next one, then went back into that. And it showed you all the cinematography from his films. And you know, and you're like, what a bloody good filmmaker he is. Yeah, you know,
he's genius.
He's done some really good stuff that I do need to go back and watch his body of work. So for me, Insomnia, that's one that I really want to revisit. And
I've
watch
never
again.
Seen that one, and you've not one, seen it.
It'd be good if me and you watch that. Yeah, I think that'd be good. Yeah,
there's another one, isn't there? His first one, which is
I can't remember what his first film was, but yeah, it's a black and white one, isn't it? Yeah. But yeah, simply for me, I want to go watch that. But yeah, I do need to watch this again just to try and enjoy it again this time. I loved the ending of it. I thought that was really good. I loved the, and again, spoilers all over this. The interaction with Tom Conti's Albert Einstein in it. I loved the interaction there and what had actually happened there. I won't give anything away, but there's something that happens in the film and then you see what happens later on
from another perspective.
I did really enjoy it, but
just on the
it's
ending.
Like Dunkirk again, like anything Nolan does. I think you do need to watch his films more than once to get something more out of it.
It's funny,
he's that
though,
kind of filmmaker.
Do you feel with Nolan as well though? Like, I mean, I might be wrong. Has he written everything? Has he wrote all? He wrote all his films. Like,
I think him and his brothers wrote most of them, aren't they?
He wrote this. He penned this one, didn't he?
Yeah.
Right? Nolan gets put on that pedestal of like the visual stuff and the storytelling devices, your time and the work he's done with music, with the composers and this and that. But I feel in most of the films that you watch of Nolan, the emotional beats are massive in them.
Yeah.
You know, Interstellar, for all that is a monumentally confusing film, the best bits in that film are when you sat there watching him sobbing and over the videos and the bit at the end when he can see the inevitable and, you know, things like that. You look at Inception, all the dream levels and all stuff like that, it really, in the story at the end, it counts for nothing because it's just about how DiCaprio feels about his kids, isn't it, and what he wants from that. You know, they've all got, even in Tenet, you feel for the relationship that she's going to, you know, there's so many emotional beats in it. And I felt the same in this, because that end scene, watching it on that first time, I just had tears rolling down my face.
Yeah.
And I agree with you, you praise it for the way it was portrayed, and I loved that. I thought that was amazing. Yeah. And I'll talk about perspective in a minute. But yeah, that reality of that end scene, and again, I'll echo what you said, I won't spoil it in the sense of talking about it and stuff, even though we said spoilers. But it's that good that if you haven't seen this and you just passively listen to this, you've got to experience that scene firsthand. I thought it was brilliant. And like you say about perspective, because in the trailer it's evident that there's black and white scenes and coloured scenes and things like that. I thought, and I think as we both spoke about this afterwards, that was going to be like a time thing in the sense that black and white is pre-bomb, colour is something like that.
Yeah.
But again, that was so cleverly done that it was more the viewpoint of what you were seeing. And I think one of them was, I always get confused between subjective and objective. Which one's factual and which one's opinion out of those? What's art? Art's subjective, isn't it?
Art's objective.
Right, so objective. So subjective is the one that this is how it happened.
Yeah.
So that was like the court stuff that you saw and everything that was almost factual. That was the black and white stuff. And then the coloured stuff was Oppenheimer's subjective view or objective view, whichever one it is. Which I thought, what a clever device. Because, it isn't just time, is it? Because you're seeing coloured scenes which are set after the bomb. And then the next coloured scene that you're seeing is when he was younger. And then the next coloured scene is before the, you know, and it jumps about. I'd love to see like a supercut of this where it's all in order, in chronological order.
Yeah, it'd be clever.
But that'd be cool to watch. Yeah. And I bet it'd make a coherent film because of how good he is at his filmmaking. But I did watch saying to you, going into, just saying about how good of a filmmaker he is, going into this, I was watching a lot of the press stuff and the actors' interviews and stuff. And someone, I think it was from Collider, asked Cillian Murphy, they said, can you shed any light on any of the deleted scenes that didn't make the cut? because it is a 3-hour film. Yeah. You know, what was some of the stuff that was cut? And he just like deadpan looked at him and he was like, there's no deleted scenes in a Christopher Nolan film.
Yeah.
The script that he writes is the film that he makes. And I can believe that.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I'm sure if you look on the Batman DVD, there might be some things cut. But I reckon with these big meaty films, 95% of what he of his vision and what he writes
he's that
comes
kind of
to
that,
fruition, doesn't
he? He's an auteur, is what he is, isn't he? He's a master of his art.
Well, it's very like thingy on like media, isn't it? Like seeing it in its true form. Like I watched the thing about him with physical media, saying, you know, he's pro, because there's a lot of thing at the minute about Disney are pulling, for example, Disney are pulling out making 4K Blu-rays in Australia.
You're joking.
So Disney are they own everything, don't they?
Yeah.
So in Australia, they're looking to stop making Blu-rays. So obviously that's a profit thing, isn't it? They want everything on their platform. But there was a thing with him, not necessarily linked to Disney, but he was talking about you can't be watching it in a on a Blu-ray or
this.
A 4K thing.
It's funny you should say this because I started watching a lot of, as you know, I watch a lot of YouTube videos, and I've started watching a lot of, I can't remember the name of it, but there's a channel, it's a French, it's the last remaining DVD shop or video, like what would be classed as a rental shop, like a video rental, but it's the last DVD shop. And they have famous stars that walk around it. So they've had, I've watched one with Brad Pitt. I've watched one with, I can't remember who else there was. I've watched quite a few. There's quite a few people, famous people. They walk around the shop, Wes Anderson, a few other people. And they're just like in awe of like, you know, you can imagine like shelves and shelves of all these films. And they talk about some of their films that they've brought out or that they've made. And they also talk about the films that they love, you know, like, you know, Edward Norton was the one I watched the other night, and they talk about what they as an actor or as a fan of film, what they're like. Christopher Nolan did one with Cillian Murphy, and the two of them walked around. So it's recent. It's from the last few months, and Christopher Nolan he's just like a. He's like a Scorsese, you know, like this historian of film that he just knows everything about films. And Cillian Murphy actually says this, like, you know, he's such a nerd, you know, he just knows everything about them. And he's talking about these films, and he says something like that, like, you just can't beat, you know, seeing them on the big screen, but you can't beat physical media, holding it in your hand and even just looking at the artwork of it.
That was the clip. He references the back of the box.
And Edward Norton said the same thing about, like, I think he said about one of his films that the 25th Hour, he looked at the DVD box set of it and he said, I absolutely hate the artwork of this. He said, I love this film. It was a great film to make, and I love what me and, I can't remember his name.
25th Hour?
Yeah, the actor that died. Philip Seymour Hoffman. He said, me and Phil Hoffman, what we did in this, you know, it was great. And he talks about Spike Lee, and he says, but I just cannot stand that cover. That cover's awful. Hate the artwork for it. And they do, you know, and it is. And I'm a big fan. You are, but of physical media. I love it. You know, I think it's great. And it is like a dying art, really. But it will come round again. You know,
without a doubt. Yeah,
it's like vinyl. Vinyl now. People collect vinyl. And you know, like, this guy who I know lives on the corner. You know, he's mad about his vinyl, about soundtracks from movies, and it's not just so much about the music itself; it's about the artwork that goes with it. You know, so
I think the sad thing is
just sort of going off a tangent there, but the thing with Nolan is that he's like that, it's got to be seen in it. They made this film in IMAX. Like he does all his films, to be seen on the big screen. So he didn't want it streaming. He wants it to be seen on the big screen. Hence the fact he moved away from Warner Brothers and went with Universal, had his big fallout with them, and he's gone with another studio. And it's been made in IMAX, and it will be shown in IMAX. And the fact that Mission Impossible got pulled out of all the IMAX theatres because it got released a week before. Nolan had it written into his contract that when it comes, this film comes out, it has to be shown in IMAX. So if you want this film, it's going in the IMAX theatres. So everything else gets pulled away from it. I mean, what sort of pull is that? It shows you how much he wants you to see this film like that, and how much he puts into it. The fact that they made the first ever black and white IMAX film, they actually have to make the cameras and the film to actually make this, you know. So it is an art, and he is an auteur.
Just before we move on to just tie a couple of more things back to the film, though.
Best living filmmaker at the moment for me.
I would agree. Yeah. I think the worry I have with like your physical media and stuff like that is that we live in a world where people want things like on demand, don't they? There and then.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I work with children in my day job. You can see within the 11 years that I've been doing this, how that's evolved.
Yeah.
So kids now know how to do a lot more quicker on demand on these things. So in terms of like consuming content, we all do it, don't we? Flicking through Netflix, there's 10 million things there and there's nothing to watch, you know, so there's everything there, isn't there?
Yeah.
The thing that you're going to find with, I think, with physical media is because there's on technology wise, you're going to only reach a point where it's almost getting it's niche then, isn't it? So like, for example, a 4K Blu-ray, the difference between that and a normal Blu-ray comes in two parts. It comes in the resolution and the encoding of the audio.
Yeah.
Right? So the resolution, you're going to start to see over the next 2 or 3 years, 8K TVs. Right? But unless you sat...
Excuse me.
Unless you sat a certain distance away from it or a certain distance close to it, the actual human eye cannot really interpret any difference. You know, there's quite a lot of people that you would show a DVD and a Blu-ray.
Well, I'm a bit like that. But
no,
yeah.
But I'm not criticizing. Yeah. I'm just saying that's the card you dealt with, right? You would look at it and you might not be fussed by it. So you might say, yeah, that one's a little bit fuzzier, but it don't matter. It's still the same film. Or B, you actually might not be able to tell, which is fine, right? The audio side of it is where it comes in because you can carry a lot more data on a 4K Blu-ray disc than you can a standard Blu-ray disc because the size of the disc. And the track, like a Dolby Atmos track, for example, is a hell of a lot more, a lot bigger than the standard 5.1 track you get on Blu-ray, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But there won't be a lot of people, like, I've got a decent setup in terms of sound, but you can get a hell of a lot more expensive ones than what mine are. You can pay thousands and thousands of pounds. But there won't be that many people out there who've got 7.2.2 setups where they've got ceiling speakers and that, like when you go to your IMAX or your iSense screens, that's the selling point, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
59 speakers around you and makes you immersed in it, which is all well and good for a film like this, but you won't go and see Barbie in iSense to say you've seen it. So I think what you'll find is they'll probably still keep making them, and there'll be an audience out there who will always lap this up. But I think the home media side of it, you've probably seen it a little bit with CDs as well. I know you can still buy CDs, but they're quite they've almost fallen into what the vinyl
like
was
a niche
10 years ago. It's a loyalist, a traditionalist, isn't it, who buys that? And I think you'll find that with stuff, which is sad.
I think last year, I've kind of moved away from CDs.
Yeah.
And I'm somebody who was like that.
I can't remember the last CD that I bought, but Spotify is completely saturated the need for CDs, hasn't it, really?
So yeah.
It will be interesting.
But
I mean,
I do think you miss having something in your hand, like physical media.
I agree. Yeah, I fully agree.
I'm such a big advocate for
physical
media.
God, how many steelbooks have I got?
Yeah.
You know, where I'm really
but even
they're
like,
ridiculously
like, say, even
expensive.
Even like DVDs, I love the DVD in my hand, and it's like, you know, it's just great. I just like having physical media.
Big Fish.
Big Fish, terrible film. We won't go into that again.
But to bring it back onto Oppenheimer, standout performer, what would you say?
I mean, Robert Downey Jr. And I mean, there's some good...
That's maybe a harsh question to ask.
There's so many people in it, isn't there? Josh Hartnett was very good in it.
I thought that was good about it. It was like who could you
Matthew
spot
Modine.
Next? What it?
Yeah.
Like...
there was
Jack
Gary
Quaid,
Oldman.
Like...
Gary Oldman was in it. Yeah, Jack Quaid. I liked, what was his name? He was in it, that guy of Chronicle. He was good in it.
Oh, yeah.
Can't remember his name. But
I think Cillian Murphy and Downey Jr., they were you.
I think they're going to be up for Oscars, I think. I really do think.
Doubt,
I think Robert Downey Jr. will get nominated. I think Cillian Murphy will,
I like how you're calling him Cillian and I'm calling him Cillian. We're both sticking to it, which is good. Yeah. We haven't called each other out on it, even though I now inadvertently have. So we'll just keep going with it. We'll pretend this didn't happen.
Yeah.
Do you think this will be Nolan's best film? Do you think the Oscar? Do you think this could be a chance because of the context of it? Do you think the subject matter?
Yeah,
is it a bit
maybe.
More award season-y than a Tenet or an Interstellar? Yeah. You know, that kind of thing.
I think with Nolan, I don't think he needs it.
Oh no, he probably doesn't.
I think he's that kind of actor that he doesn't make films. I'm not saying everyone does, but Well, they do, don't they? Some actors and some directors. Some
definitely do, yeah.
They definitely, their choices that of the films that they make and the things that they do are to definitely just try and get an Oscar. Mm. You can see it. I mean, do I say it?
Yeah, do it. They're never going to listen to it.
I mean, I think you look at Spielberg, what he's done after he's won his Oscar.
Not Stevie. Spielberg.
No, I like Steven Spielberg films. I really do. But you look what has he done since he won an Oscar in 1993? He's done a lot of films, but he's never really, you know, I don't know.
What did he win an Oscar for?
Schindler's List.
Never seen it.
Right, okay. In the same year, within 6 months, he brought out.
You looked morally disgusted at me when I said that.
I can't believe you've not seen it. Wow. Long before, I don't know, 93. What's you? 6, 5, 4?
3, 2, 1. No, 4. I'm in 4.
4 years old, yeah. I remember going to the cinema to see Schindler's List. Wow, what an experience that was. And then watching, I can't remember if it came out within a month, 2 months before. I think it was within 6 months, but I can't think which way it went. I think Schindler's List came out, and then he followed it in the summer, or it might have been the other way around, but Jurassic Park.
Right, okay.
And off the back of both those films, being so different and so artistic and so clever, like one's groundbreaking in the sense that it was, it was groundbreaking in terms of special effects and everything what it did and what it pioneered. And then to also do everything what he did with Schindler's List, you can see why he won the Oscar. He won the Oscar on both them films, not just one. He won it on Schindler's List, but it was off the back of both those films in that year. And it was like the culmination of such a career where he probably should have won it before then. Mm. And like some people say, like, Close Encounters or E.T. are his best films. I don't think they are. I think, you know, you are looking at like Jurassic Park or even like Indiana Jones or something like that. But yeah, you know, what he won it for, Schindler's List. But then what he did afterwards, I don't know. It's an hard one. Like I said there, he was maybe chasing the Oscar.
Yeah.
The projects that he's done afterwards, maybe again trying to chase an Oscar. Mm. I don't know, maybe he was. I think he was a little bit. I think he has been in the past. But that's what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying.
Scorsese. I think Scorsese didn't get the Oscar, so he's chased it and chased it. Leonardo DiCaprio, definitely been chasing an Oscar.
That became a bit of a meme, didn't it, really?
Yeah.
DiCaprio still
didn't get one. Same with Scorsese. Yeah. So some actors, for me, do chase an Oscar, or even directors do chase an Oscar. I don't think that Nolan does. I think he just goes out there and he's like, well, I've got this project. It's something close to my heart. Something I've been invested in for many years. Something I've always wanted to do. I'm going to go and do it, you know. Yeah.
Did you like me showing you that little clip from Tenet where they talk about Oppenheimer?
Yeah, yeah. It takes you back to it and just references
quite
a
nice
it.
Little
it's quite clever as well that I think you told me this, didn't you? But I've actually heard it as well online. Where there's three films, Tenet, Interstellar and Oppenheimer, where they're all probably could all be linked in some sense.
Like set in the same
universe or timeline or something, yeah.
Which that'd be pretty cool.
That would be pretty clever. Smart. But I don't think that
will
ever
think it will be, no.
It won't reference
bag,
that,
yeah,
no.
Yeah.
No. But it's good. Clever.
A Christopher Nolan Bond film would be pretty damn cool though, wouldn't it?
I was just you've took the words out of my mouth there because I was just gonna say that a moment ago. I was gonna say I think that's what's next for him.
Do you think?
I think because he's hinted it before. Inception had the nod to the Bond film with the snow scene and all that. That was
Her Majesty's
Secret Service, which
is Ben will be so proud of me.
Yeah, which I think is his favorite Bond film. But you know, he said that he's always he's always been a big fan of those and wanted to do those. So. I think he will. I think he'll do one.
Can you imagine, like, how stacked the cast would be in a Christopher Nolan James Bond film?
Yeah, who'd like be a bad guy in it? It's got to be Cillian Murphy, hasn't it?
I'd go Cillian Murphy. I'd
go Cillian Murphy.
But no, it would. It would be that'd be pretty epic. That, and I agree with you. That who knows?
Yeah,
I would say it's highly likely that before Christopher Nolan stops making films. On this scale, you know, of this magnitude, it's highly unlikely that he won't do a Bond film. Yeah. You know that, and that's going to be pretty damn cool, isn't it, really?
Yeah. I think he'll just do one. I don't think he'll do a series. Yeah, that's the difference, yeah.
Well, like
Sam
really...
Mendes, can't say his name. He did two, didn't he? But I think he would have done a third, but yeah. Oh, no, it wasn't. It was Danny Boyle, wasn't it? But yeah.
Sadly, I don't think it will be the next Bond film because... No. You would imagine there's some pieces in play for that kind of thing already. Yeah. But this would have been the perfect time to do a Christopher Nolan Bond film, wouldn't it? Where, you know, you've essentially drawn a line. Yeah. But anyway, that's...
But yeah, final thoughts on this.
Scott and Steve will figure that out.
Final thoughts on this one for me. Go see it.
Mm-hmm.
Go see it. Enjoy it. Let us know on the comments on Instagram and mm-hmm. Twitter and Facebook and all of the major podcast
send
providers.
Send us a letter.
Send us a letter. Put on a DVD, post a DVD through, you know. Reach out to us and let us know what you think of it. It was a really good film. I really enjoyed it. But what I will say is it was okay. It was okay. I'll do that thing where I set the fence and save off.
I liked it.
It was okay.
It wasn't
great. Nah, it wasn't my cup of tea. No, but joking aside, it was a good film. Just if you go, don't let other people enjoy your experience of it. And if you are going to go and you're going to ruin it for somebody else, don't rustle your bag of crisps. Don't ruin other people's cinema experience. Be respectful of others. There you go. Jerry Springer final thoughts.
No, I think that's a fair point. This might be a difficult question for you to answer. Do you think, because obviously you had maybe an indifferent start to the film, do you think it felt 3 hours? Because I didn't. Both times I felt the pace of this film was really good.
It did feel a long film.
To say it's a long film, though. You know
it
what
did
mean?
Feel a long film, but it didn't feel 3 hours.
Yeah.
No.
I would agree, yeah. And I think, because 3 hours, that's a long time.
Yeah.
In it for a film. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was really, really good. Yeah. Very high on my Nolan list. And I feel my third viewing will be the deciding factor for me.
I will say it wasn't my film of the year, though.
Okay.
And we'll talk more about that later in the year. Yeah.
Oh, exciting.
Yeah.
Well, Stephen, if people are listening to this in some kind of time bubble and they want to go and listen to that podcast that you've just referenced, where can they find it?
On all major podcast providers.
They can.
Think about that.
And they can find us on...
No, on all major podcast providers.
On Instagram, Facebook and Twitter by searching for Watch the Film Pod. Or you can go to watchfilmpod.com.
Yes.
Go and see Oppenheimer. But yeah, don't make nuclear weapons. It doesn't end well.
No.
That's my closing thoughts.
And don't rustle crisps.
And don't rustle crisps.
Thanks a lot. Take care.